Welcome back to the Food Trainers Podcast. I'm Lauren, and I'm actually not here with Kaylee.
We are here virtually today. Hi, everyone. We are recording from our bedrooms at home.
Yeah, the snowstorm threw us off a little bit. So one of the snowstorms. So we're trying this. Hopefully, the podcast gods will make it sound okay.
Yes.
So I'm usually excited to record, but it's really, I have to say, been quite a week. We had a different topic planned for today, or I should say planned for the day we usually record. But this past Saturday, the weekend before recording, I was getting ready to leave for Vermont. And I, you know, opened up my emails with a few minutes before we left. And I was just stunned. I heard from, you know, a client in the past who had received a cancer diagnosis, and she was asking if I had experience in the area. And I, you know, sort of sent her back like a you know, unedited, terrible email just to get back to her. And then I finally drove up to Vermont, or I should say my son, scary enough, up to Vermont. Yeah. You know, at crazy speeds. And I opened up my computer and I saw on social media that a friend had been diagnosed, an acquaintance, and was having, you know, in a couple of days, breast cancer surgery. So I this is crazy, but without being like the bearer of like horrible news, that was like only two of the four cases that like sort of were, you know, I was connected to this week.
Just this week, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was just really one of those weeks. And, you know, I'm not at all looking for sympathy because it's not for me. I just think it's kind of, especially, you know, sort of in my age group, not that uncommon, although this was a doozy. A parent of one of my boy's friends passed away after fighting like I've never seen anybody fight. So yeah, so my first reaction was just shock and sadness and disbelief. And then I think it's how I cope. My second reaction is always like, what can I do? And so that's where this podcast comes in.
Yeah, that's just a lot to deal with.
Yeah, it's a lot to deal with, but I'm sure it's not, you know, many people are dealing with this. And also, like I said, you know, I'm not, you know, knock on wood, dealing with this personally right now, but the rate and the risk of cancer from your mid-40s onward kind of skyrocket. And to answer the client's question who had contacted me, I do unfortunately have experience with oncology, though I'd be the first person to say it's not my specialty. It's not all I do in doing this for, you know, 20 plus years. Of course, I've had clients confront all sorts of diagnoses. And I don't know, without being really judgy, some of the nutrition advice, you know, clients receive in hospitals, and I worked in a hospital, even in premier cancer centers, can be a little outdated, you know, full of Boost and Ensure drinks and not necessarily cutting edge. So I do think it's important, if the information here appeals to you, to look for an integrative oncologist who will, you know, sort of meld Western and, you know, sort of less traditional approaches, or a functional medicine doctor. There's also the SIO, the Society of Integrative, I forget what it
oncology,
stands for,
but
yeah, Integrative Oncology. Yeah, the SIO Society.
I know. Oh. And so wait, I have to ask, like, was it before this news that you were reading the cancer code? Because you had even been posting about that on Instagram.
I know. It's kind of ironic. I mean, I like to read both related to nutrition and in general, but I had just finished, like, I had it with me in my backpack that I was bringing to Vermont just to, you know, sort of transfer the notes that I take. A book that it's called The Cancer Code by Jason Fung. He's written, you know, sort of the obesity code and a books about fasting. I think he has a handful of books out. This book read like a mystery. It really is, you know, because I find a lot of health and science books are difficult to get through. This wasn't, at least for me. I mean, he really tells it like the story of, you know, of cancer and these different paradigms. I also read, right, the night before I left for Vermont, I finished Between Two Kingdoms, which is an excellent memoir, and a large part of that focuses on cancer, specifically leukemia.
So yeah. Honestly, it seems like we were meant to talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, what I always see is that when people are diagnosed, they'll do anything and everything. And we just really need to try and, you know, impress upon people to do it beforehand, if at all possible.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about cancer, and it's just an overview, as this is obviously a huge topic, but we'll mention some readings and experts we recommend, as well as foods and supplements, both for prevention and also to prevent reoccurrence, which you kind of just mentioned.
Absolutely.
So where to start?
I know. Maybe we could start with like just a little bit about the cancer code, a little bit more now that I'm thinking about it.
I'm sure everyone's curious. I am like to.
Yeah, no. And it talks about these different paradigms regarding cancer, how like one that stuck with me, how like, you know, sort of getting to the genetics of cancer doesn't necessarily, and specific cancers doesn't really tell us, you know, why it originated in the first place. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I mean, the bummer of the book was that despite advances with so many other diseases in terms of survival rates and real breakthroughs, we hear so much about cancer research, but it's lagging behind a little bit. So that was the downside. I would say the, you know, sort of the most uplifting, if we could say that, part of it was that I had always known that there's a genetic component to cancer. I think we all kind of live in fear of our genes, and that then there's, you know, sort of our behaviors, our environment, what we can control. There's actually something called epigenetics, which is, you know, that, you know, your genes are sort of like the seeds, and lots of what's made of the environment and our behaviors is sort of the soil. So do those seeds grow or not? And he put it, Jason Fung, at about 70-30. 70% of sort of our risk is environmental, you know, anything from toxins to stress to our diet, of course, mm-hmm. which we're going to dive into, and 30% of it being genetic, which is kind of, I hope, relieving for those who do have a strong family history. Although having said that, I hear all the time of people diagnosed who had zero family mm-hmm. history.
Yeah.
So I think good and bad news.
Yeah. And what are other books you'd recommend if someone wants to like educate themselves on this topic?
Yeah. So I have to, you know, just disclaimer, normally I'm, you know, sort of just like a compulsive researcher. And if we have a topic, even if it is a topic I talk about daily, I really try to dive into the latest book studies, et cetera. Sometimes having, as we did today, a little help from our interns. So this wasn't a pod we had planned. Mm-hmm. And based on that, I'm just going to give you sort of course, done a lot of reading over the years, and just sort of like what's on my bookshelf, on my computer currently. The Metabolic Approach to Cancer by Nasha Winters is a really good book. She, like many experts that sort of come up in, you know, it's sort of like, I think, what prompts some people to study certain things. She had ovarian cancer at age 19, late stage. I believe she's now, you know, my age, in her 40s, but also an excellent book. I think the book before Cancer Code that a lot of people, you know, sort of as an overview look to was The Emperor of All Maladies by Siddhartha Mukherjee. I think that's how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. I've never actually said it out loud. it's about 5 or 7 years old. Another sort of really comprehensive look. In terms of breast cancer, Elizabeth Boham just has a lot of good information out there. I don't think she has a book, but she has a video. It might be a video series now, Tools to Prevent and Heal from Breast Cancer. We are going to put this in our show notes too. And another one, what is it called? Radical Remission, mm-hmm. By Kelly Turner. She kind of looked at people, she's a PhD, not an MD, so she was just looking at trends and looked at people who had healed themselves from later stage cancer diagnoses. What do they all have in common? Which I think is just an interesting concept. Look at survivors, you know, learn from them. And that's a really interesting one. I think last year she has a more recent book out, but Radical Remission is worth checking out. It's just inspiring.
Mm-hmm. I know. I have to say, it's not a topic that I have read a lot about or learned about in school yet, even. So I'm mm-hmm. interested to see if we will cover this. But I did have a friend within the past year who was diagnosed with cancer.
I remember.
Thankfully, yeah, I know. I reached out to you because his family was kind of interested in what they could do, like nutrition and diet wise, to figure mm-hmm. it out. So it's, I don't know.
Is he your age?
Yes, we're the same age. So he's 27.
So in his 20s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned certain cancers, especially skyrocketing sort of my middle age, in your 40s yeah. and beyond. but we all have, you know, sort of cases, sadly, and I'm so sorry for your friends. Like the book I had read, Between Two Kingdoms, especially at a time that's supposed to be so carefree, you know, not that there's ever a good time.
How's he doing? He's in remission. He's doing well after he had a few surgeries. So it's been
okay. Good.
Yeah. Almost back to normal, which is good.
That is good. It seems, you know, in my eyes, kind of that was kind of quick, but I'm sure it wasn't for him.
I know. Yeah. I know there's also like a relationship between weight and cancer. Is that like obesity and cancer?
No, I mean, good. I think that's a good topic we can go to, but it's actually not necessarily, it doesn't have to be obesity. I think people just kind of like, oh, if they're not obese, kind of think that it's, you know, sort of they disregard that. So first of all, I think we talked about this a little bit, maybe in terms of COVID and the cytokine storm, but the most inflammatory, talked about it in weight loss is, you know, there's nothing wrong with weight loss or whatever mm-hmm. that episode was called. And if you listen to what I'm going to say, well, let me get say it anyway. So I'm a little tongue-tied. The most inflammatory cells are fat cells. And I think that, you know, many people don't necessarily connect the dots between inflammation and cancer. I mean, inflammation is really connected to like all major diseases on some level, but inflammation, and I'll say this slowly and clearly, makes your body more prone to cancer growth. So when you hear that term, and it kind of seems like a, you know, what does that mean? Inflamed, not inflamed. It really predisposes you to, you know, so going down multiple roads that are, you know, sort of that you don't want to be on. There's also an enzyme called aromatase in fat cells that takes other hormones and turns them into estrogen. So mm-hmm. more fat cells, more aromatase produced, more estrogen. So you can kind of see where this is going. One, inflammation, and also just hormonally what fat cells can do. In women, too much estrogen is linked to, you know, an increased risk for, you know, more so I think postmenopausal, but breast, endometrial, ovarian cancers. And for men, increased estrogen is, and sort of the hormonal, you know, sort of ramifications affect prostate cancer risk. And the other part of this, you know, that is kind of, I don't want to complicate too much, is that, so we talked about inflammation. I mentioned sort of estrogen via aromatase, but there's also insulin. This comes up all the time in the prostate mm-hmm. cancer data. So excess insulin isn't just an issue for those with excess weight. We've talked about, you know, insulin being the hormone that, you know, clears, you know, sugar from your bloodstream. Insulin is also, you know, it's a growth hormone in a way. So sure, obese and diabetic, we think of them having high insulin, but you can be, and I can't say this, you know, sort of strongly enough, you can be a normal, healthy weight and have high insulin. So, you know, if you're sort of like, my weight's in a good place, I'm tuning this out, please don't. Hyperinsulinemia or high insulin doubles breast cancer risk regardless of weight. That was also covered mm-hmm. in the cancer code. There's a test called C-peptide, which is a good gauge of insulin. But I have to say again, middle-age weight gain, for all of these reasons, and weight gain in general, perhaps, should be taken seriously. There was a stat, I forget the details, that was something like, you know, of course, if you had to, losing 10 kilos, which is, you know, sort of 20-something pounds, mm-hmm. decreases risk over 50%. I mean, that's staggering to me. Mm-hmm. So I think people who poo-poo weight loss and diet culture, of course, there are a trillion ways to lose weight in an unhealthy way, but, you know, kind of, you know, it's not the most responsible thing to be propagating.
I'm sure I'm speaking for like a lot of listeners. When you think about the risks of being overweight, you sort of think about diabetes, think about heart disease and stroke. I'm not sure you think cancer.
I know. I agree. I do because, you know, sort of I've been in this and sort of trying to understand through the years, but I also don't think you connect what I just said, like insulin when you're not insulin being elevated when you're not overweight, even though, you know, the connection in the research has been made about 50 years mm-hmm. ago. So yeah, no, I agree with you. It actually frustrates me because I think that, and this came up as I was like, you know, sort of just putting together my thoughts for this podcast, that so much, you know, even and I'm not at all, you know, sort of saying anything negative, but trying to help others. My, you know, sort of friend or friend of a friend that was heading to surgery said, you know, get your mammograms. And I actually am getting mine next week. It did get me to, you know, sort of call and not skip that. But as great as it is to eradicate cancer or attempt to once it's there, even screening is a matter of like catching it early and not necessarily preventing it. So it's just like a little, you know, of course, get your tests, see your doctors, don't forget your screening tools, but you kind of, I encourage you to do this stuff also.
Yeah. I think it's important to discuss sugar too. The PET scan info is another connection that like blew my mind.
I know this is one that sticks with people, I think, because of like the visual involved. So when I was in grad school or when I was first starting to learn about these things, as Kayleen, well, as she goes through her rotations soon, is cancer loves sugar. That was the adage I learned, you know, years ago. And in, you know, and I learned that in grad school and, you know, not to revisit, are you taking nutritional biochem right now?
No, I took it last summer.
Okay. So do you learn about Warburg at all?
Or I'm doing advanced nutrition now too, which is like all those details.
I think it probably is about 100 years ago or close. There was a scientist, Warburg, who, well, like just to backtrack, a little science, bear with me. There's two ways to get energy, that your cells can get energy. One is aerobic with oxygen, but in case there's no oxygen, your cells are pretty smart and can do it anaerobically without oxygen. I remember learning that cancer cells, and this is the Warburg effect, which you'll read about a lot if you, you know, sort of have any interest in studying this at all. Cancer cells use anaerobic or the less efficient, you know, sort of non-oxygen way method. And, you know, sort of, I think like, you know, so many facts when you learn them in school, like I never really connected the dots. So just to make this clear, because this is the less efficient pathway, it actually requires more glucose. You know, sort of, it's like, if you think about like a gas that doesn't work as well in a car and you actually have to burn through more of it. So cancer cells have more like almost glucose receptors so that they can get the fuel they need to sadly grow. So the Warburg effect is that cancer cells prefer glucose. And the same way that insulin causes fat cells to grow and can cause cancer cells to grow, the, you know, sort of the glucose receptors can sort of help the cancer cells proliferate too. So what Kayleen, sorry about that. What Kayleen was referring to is a PET scan. This is a common imaging procedure. And what happens is radioactive glucose, so glucose thinks that you could trace, is injected. And the way you detect cancer cells is that they light up, the ones that are taking the glucose up most rapidly. So if you think about, you know, sort of where sugar is being most used in your body, that's how they're tracking cancer. I mean, I think it's like, you know, sort of if you haven't heard of that, that sort of really should resonate. Cancer cells use something like glucose at 50 times the rate of a healthy cell.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's something about thinking of cancer cells feeding on glucose or sugar that's a little unnerving. It's also, I think, when you think about it, how these cells are using sugar, it's probably one of the reasons there is emerging info on keto diets, both for prevention and with those undergoing chemo, right?
Yeah, I mean, a great point. We, you know, I'm really trying to stick to the basics today. I think that was a great point to bring up, but you're absolutely right. And I like that you brought up it's not only being used sort of as a preventive measure, it's being used, which is kind of novel for people actually undergoing treatment and to, you know, with great results.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess let's talk about food and supplements. Obviously, it's never one supplement or food that's like the cure-all, but incorporating as many as possible.
You know, like, no, because different supplements, you know, help in different ways, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like, when you're trying to boost your immune system, you don't just want to, you know, I don't know, take oil of oregano. You want to, you know, sort of throw a bunch of things at your body. And I have to say, whenever we're talking about a disease, it, you know, not that I'm looking for this, but it validates much of what we do when we do discuss weight loss, you know, sort of in our sessions with clients. The things that make you healthy in one way, you know, don't just make you healthy in one day, way. They're decreasing your risk in multiple ways with the same food. So first I would probably look at, you know, sort of just mention green tea. It's really one of the top foods, you know, time and time again, when it comes to cancer prevention. I'm actually doing, I don't know if you saw, a green tea challenge for February with a friend who's an RD. But, you know, again, it doesn't take a lot from us to have a green tea or a matcha and worthwhile. If you listen to the episode where we introduced BFF.
It was episode 44. Yeah.
And what was it? Do you know what it was called?
I forget what it was called, though.
It was like something about like best supplements for weight loss.
For weight loss. Yeah.
Something like that. Okay. So first, green tea. Second, we talked about something in that episode called the metabolic master switch with respect to weight loss. It's called AMPK, but there's a medication that comes up in the cancer research a lot called metformin. BFF, mm-hmm. as we discussed, you can go back and listen to that episode, is very similar to metformin, but with fewer of the long-term concerns that we have. So both green tea, the active ingredient in green tea, turmeric, chocolate, BFF, or our berberine supplement, these all work via this metabolic master switch. And they're not only helpful by, you know, sort of increasing, by making this work efficiently, but they're also helpful in terms of being strong anti-cancer benefit. Mm-hmm. Many of the studies with green tea, many of the studies on the specific foods are small, but in Japan, they said that, you know, sort of regular green tea consumption could delay the onset of cancer by 7 years, reduce breast cancer recurrence. And again, I remember once I was listening to, it was in a cancer documentary, and the person who was a survivor, or I guess it's now called a thriver, was saying that if you wait for like the research to confirm everything, it could be too late. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in terms of specifics, yeah, we love, is it Belok? I think that's how you say it, right? I was like, so I read it differently in my head. Green tea.
How do you read it in your head?
Belok for some reason, okay. But I know that's not right. It's definitely sounds fancier as Belok, but we love their green teas. We're actually getting their mint green tea in stock, which I'm excited about.
Having that a lot. It's delicious. Yeah.
And then a company called Big Tea, New York City. We love that we've had that in stock before. And then for matcha, we love Matcha Full. We always have that in stock. And there's also Chalet, which is a good one too.
Is it Chalet or Chilate?
I read things differently.
I know. And it's funny because even, I don't even know if I'm right, but it's like you never say certain things that you see on a computer.
Out loud. So I could be wrong on that one, but they have a cafe down in downtown New York City. So,
yes. Which I've been to. One near me too. I think it's like Amsterdam and 83rd.
Oh, okay.
Good stuff. They have all sorts of different interesting matches.
And then in addition to green tea too, we have what we call our top shelf veggies. Once again, plays a role when you look at cancer, right?
Absolutely. So top shelf vegetables, just to remind everyone, that would be broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, kale. I recently realized that radishes are in this group, which makes me happy. Mm-hmm. I'm team radish. and we suggest for clients in general, having one from this group daily. So one top shelf vegetable daily, a couple of cups of it, or half a dinner plate, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And one study that's mentioned often was from Vanderbilt Cancer Center. And this is a study from 2012. I'll read from it. It says, researchers found cruciferous vegetable intake during the first 36 months after breast cancer diagnosis was associated with a reduced risk for total mortality and breast cancer specific mortality and disease recurrence.
Yeah, pretty powerful. And, mm-hmm. and although, you know, and all, you know, I think some of the phytochemicals in the cruciferous vegetables, also the active ingredient in green tea and the foods that affect that metabolic master switch, they, you know, sort of get a lot of attention. And radical remission, one of the features uniting all the people she studied who were these, you know, surviving against the odds, were high vegetable intake. So about half, as I said, half a plate of vegetables is what we recommend at lunch and dinner and breakfast if you can. And I'll say it again, you know, many healthy people focus on what they're cutting out of their diet, which again, if you're listening to us and you've listened, sugar, you know, sort of refined carbohydrates, bad oils, sweeteners, booze. There's lots of things we believe in cutting back on, but you need to think as much about what you are eating. What's the makeup? What nutrients are you getting? And what's actually entering your body?
Yeah. And on that point of like total vegetable intake, women who were in the highest quartiles of intake of veggies per day had a 62% reduced risk of total mortality, 62% reduced risk of breast cancer mortality, and 35% reduced risk of breast cancer recurrence compared to women with the lowest quartile of vegetable intake.
Yeah. Again, so that's all, that's any vegetables, right? You know?
Yeah. They they didn't make it specific.
Yeah. So cruciferous vegetables, just to highlight those, they have components that you can hear, you'll hear a lot about, especially if you're reading about this. There's one called sulforaphane, and there's one called, you know, I3C, which are actually gene regulators. So as we said in the intro, it's not just whether you have a gene, and this is like, this is really important to listen to, it's whether the genes are expressed. Mm-hmm. So this term that you're hearing, or I hope you're hearing a lot about epigenetics, that's the effect that, you know, your diet, toxins, the environment have on your genes. So the misregulation and overexpression of some genes are responsible for cancer growth. And what you eat and what you supplement, as we'll get to, can affect whether or not these genes are expressed, or you can kind of think of it as being like, you know, powered on or something like that.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And even if people don't grasp the mechanisms that we're talking about, the net is eat these vegetables.
Yeah.
Basically, eat your veggies. Yeah.
And then the other foods we mentioned too. I'd also add berries, fish and omega-3s, onions, garlic. Those last two are keys for detoxification. Bone broth, you know, there's a, you know, sort of connection between, you know, absorbing nutrients that were from these healthy foods we're eating and your microbiome. Yeah. So there's a, you know, sort of a, definitely some foods to be focusing on.
Yeah. And then supplements, so interesting, NAC, which we call our everything pill, comes up often in research.
Yeah. So it's another vote for NAC, right? We heard it mentioned a lot in the COVID literature. So this supplement NAC, which stands for N-acetylcysteine, and its detoxification qualities, or it's actually one of the reasons it's used in hospitals for certain overdoses, in a much more mild manner, we suggest it post-drinking because it helps you clear the alcohol. So kind of think of it as a bouncer for toxins in your body. And, it, you know, sort of detoxification, as I said, again, is one of the ways, if you think about toxins increasing cancer risk, and toxins can be pollutants, toxins can be ingredients in skincare, toxins can be from plastic, you know, just to name a few. I think that word can be a little bit, you know, sort of like, what does that even mean? That it, you know, sort of, it's an important one. It's, you know, sort of on the short list if you, you know, as we've mentioned it in terms of weight and alcohol, but also in terms of cancer prevention. Also vitamin D, methylated B vitamins. It's a very important word because depending on the type and quality of B vitamins, A, there and which genes you carry, I won't get into it. I'm a poor methylator, but some, and this was actually, you know, the issue with, you know, sort of cheap forms of, you know, folic acid is that if someone doesn't methylate well, they don't get rid of estrogen well. And if you're curious, I would look at, you know, the work by Elizabeth Boham, but some cheap forms of B vitamins actually, and this, I don't want to scare anyone, but can actually increase your risk of cancer. So methylated B vitamins, our Bisane that we carry are this type. Fish oils, as I mentioned, with fish, and just probiotic. Interesting. We just talked about bone broth, but an imbalance in your gut can produce an enzyme. I'll leave out the name, you know, just because I feel like I've been, you know, towing the line of too sciencey today. This enzyme makes you reabsorb estrogen, so excrete less of it, hang on to more of it. Alcohol also increases this enzyme and then can put you at higher risk. A balanced gut, you know, sort of by taking a probiotic and eating sort of fermented foods and other foods that are, you know, good for gut health, will then, you will not be producing as much of this enzyme. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll have to ask my sister.
Okay, exactly.
She listened to the coffee episode. She was like, oh my gosh, you guys were throwing me under the bus.
I thought we were honoring her.
I thought so too. No, she thought it was funny. She was dying laughing.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I was with my sister-in-law this past weekend and she was saying like, occasionally I do find myself like wanting like a little bit more explanation. Which I totally understand. Mm-hmm. We try to keep the episodes brief too. So I think, you know, one person wants us to just cut to the chase. What do we recommend? And other people, you know, want the info. If you are a science nerd and this is an important topic to you, as it is, I hope, for everybody, it's called beta glucuronidase. Glucuronidase, I think. Mm-hmm. Don't know if I'm saying it right, but it did ring a bell for me because it was one of the, you know, sort of alcohol facts that I've referred to a bunch of times that kind of startled me when you understand how that works. And as we said, berberine. So just in terms of supplementation, and, you know, supplementation isn't, you know, the only thing to do. NAC, if you like ours, we call it our everything pill. Double D, B-stain, those are good B vitamins. And the berberine is the BFF too. And Gutsy, the probiotic.
Yes.
Did I do well?
That's all of it. Your recap, and then just fish oil, which we do sell the pure omega-3s.
Yeah. And if I would say that prior to private labeling, pure encapsulations, for most, I would say for a lot of things, not necessarily probiotics, would be our go-to if there's something that we don't carry that you want. It's just an excellent shout out to them brand.
Okay, so that is your list. Is there anything else that would be like on your initial steps for this?
Right. So we talked about weight. We talked about, now you've gotten me in the recapping frame of mind. It actually is really helpful. We talked about, you know, sort of foods to incorporate and some, you know, sort of supplements to start out with. And I will just say that, and if you've done any sort of gene testing or 23andMe or any of that, like everybody's blueprint is different. So I didn't know until a functional medicine doctor had said that I don't methylate well, but, you know, then I had that fact. So we're giving general advice, but, you know, definitely if you have, you know, retained heavy metals and had high mercury, you'd want to do certain things. If you've, you know, always had, you know, lifelong gut issues, attention should be paid there in terms of, you know, nutrient absorption and things of that nature. So yeah, we can't tailor the podcast to everybody, but just, you know, not everybody is the same genetically. So the other thing I wanted to bring up is stress reduction. Mm-hmm. People blow this off. I was somebody who was like, yeah, you know, I prided myself, I think, for, you know, until recently, really, on like being busy and, you know, sort of semi-nutso, but you can't green juice your way out of everything. And Radical Remission, the book I mentioned, she mentions, you know, sort of meditation and some sort of a, you know, relaxation practice that a lot of the survivors had, and also talks about, I don't remember the specifics, but when you look at brain scans of people while they are meditating or breathing or, you know, sort of doing any of these, you know, walking in nature, that their scans are actually different. And, you know, stress changes our brain, it, you know, sort of in not so good, such good ways. And the relaxation techniques actually improve your immunity and in a lot of ways, you know, sort of decrease your disease risk too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's interesting.
I don't know a way to express it. So, you know, I always say, I've said for a while to clients, you know, one night's sleep that's, you know, not, you know, a subpar night's sleep is like basically eating an extra bagel. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, sort of a bagel pales in comparison to disease risk, but it's almost every new client, in addition to taking a diet history and a health history, I say, how do you relax? And it's definitely in the minority that someone that tells me something they do regularly, whether it's meditation or, you know, or yoga or, mm-hmm. Any of the, you know, most of the time people say, you know, I watch TV or I, you know, exercise, which depending on the type of exercise isn't necessarily actually, mm-hmm. you know, sort of dialing it back for your body. So really just can't stress that one enough.
Okay, so now on to our Q&A. Question is from Mackenzie on Insta, and she asks, how can you be proactive in your 30s and not activate those cancerous genes?
So first of all, we have smart listeners. A great question. And second, as I said, it's been such an aha moment for me with, you know, sort of learning about genes, that there's genetics and there's, you know, all the things that we do that affect our genetics. And as I said before, it's about 70-30. There's actually 70% of our risk we can control. So that's good and that's bad. It's good in that there's a lot we can do. It's not so good if you're not doing that 70%, right? I also like this question because, and thanks, Mackenzie. I selfishly, and also just because it's when a lot of things flare up, talk a lot about, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. But as you were giving the, you know, sort of poignant example with your friend, like, it's hard to, when you're in your 20s and your 30s, think long term. So commend Mackenzie for that too. So first, I'd say exercise. We didn't mention that, but I think some of the info, you know, it's 80-20. Your weight is 80% your food, which we care about, and exercise isn't useful in that regard. It got some people to like exercise a little bit less. So definitely exercise in terms of your blood sugar, in terms of your insulin, at least 150 minutes a week, which is 30 minutes five times, but even a little bit more to work yourself up to 3 hours a week comes up a lot in the literature. That's 3 hours. So I recall like something that I had read where somebody had said, like, I wish I had been told these like simple things affect my cancer risk, not just exercise because it's good for, you know, it's healthy.
Yeah.
Specific. Watch alcohol. You know, I don't know how much Mackenzie drinks, but certainly 7 or below for women, the less the better. Again, think about, you know, sort of, and we have, you know, sort of our Damp January episode where we really went into alcohol, but think about retaining more estrogen and not necessarily, you know, sort of not bad estrogens in a way, and what it can do to your cancer risk. So it's not, again, just that it's toxic, but that it creates this cascade where, you know, sort of your body is much more, you know, sort of just accepting or encouraging of cancer cells to grow. Supplements. We mention supplements a lot, not because it's in any way, you know, makes up for a diet that's subpar, but it's easy, right? Mm-hmm. So take your vitamin D in the morning, take your NAC or the everything pills. It's, you know, I don't know, 10 seconds, 30 seconds out of your day to take all of them. And screening is important. I feel like I maybe misspoke before. I don't want to ever discourage anybody from any sort of doctor visit or screening. I have an appointment next week, but it's catching early, which is excellent and much better than, you know, catching late, is not the same as preventing. So let's do both.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe I don't want to speak for the whole younger generation, but I feel like we all focus a lot on health and like longevity, but cancer's not always at the top of that list for some reason, or it feels daunting and you don't realize that you should maybe focus on these little steps that you just mentioned here early on.
Yeah. And I think, again, just planting the seed, I always joke, and this is not a funny topic, but that I was your age and younger counseling, you know, women my age and older. And I was like, you know, I think I was like the youngest person ever to be like, you know, living in fear of menopause. I'm not fearful anymore. And I'm not there yet. But so no, I don't think, and we do hear from a lot of, you know, I would say a bunch of the, you know, sort of 20 something and 30 something new clients do have family members with some sort of a condition that, and they do want to be proactive. So I think that's excellent. I wish it were more common. I think there's something about being like young and carefree that you're not really connected to, like, you know, I think like when you're 20, 60 sounds old, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But again, we're not talking about obscure things. We're not talking about not living a life. We're really talking about things that I bet a bunch of like your healthier friends probably do: exercise, take some vitamins, eat vegetables. You know, these are not big asks of people, even without a family history.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So that's our episode for today. If you or someone close to you has received a cancer diagnosis, we're thinking of you. We're here. We're trying to help and spread this information to hopefully be helpful to many of you out there. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, please, you know, spread this episode, you know, tell your friends. It's, again, I think a lot of doable, manageable tips. And, you know, living in fear doesn't do anything for us. It's hard to avoid it. But for me, I can only speak for myself. It feels much more productive to, like, say, okay, have I had my top shelf veteran, you know, to go through a little bit of a checklist. I always revert to a checklist. But thank you for listening. Sorry if we weren't, you know, sort of as lighthearted today, but, you know, it's an important episode, something, you know, we have something to say about. And, you know, I who knows, it could, you know, if people your age, Kayleen, you know, do these things, it really could change things. So have a good week. We'll be back, you know, sort of a little more jovial next week. And thank you.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.